Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Vav Amud Aleph. Gemara is in the middle of discussing what we do with the Mishachat Oto that is found by the Seir of the Nasi, because we already learned from other psukim the necessity to have the Chatat be shechted in the Tzafon. And so then the word Oto that is found by the Seir of Nasi, what is that coming to exclude? At first, we attempted to say that it was coming to exclude the Seir of Nachshon. The Gemara says there's no necessity to exclude the Seir of Nachshon because there's no reason to believe that it was included in Tzafon. It is something that is the Sha'ah, not the Dorot. It's not a classic Chatat. It's not brought on a Chet. So therefore, anything that's included, you need a Pasuk or a Ribui to include it. So if there's nothing that's including Tzafon, you don't need anything to exclude Tzafon. So the Gemara said, okay, we'll look at it from a different perspective, which is, Ela, Oto Ta'un Tzafon, Ve'en HaShochet Omeid B'Tzafon. The Oto comes to tell you that only the Korban itself must be in the Tzafon, but the Shochet, the one performing the Shechita, does not need to be in the Tzafon. Rashi explains that we use Shochet B'Sakin Aruka, that you do it with a long knife. This is opposed to Rashi's explanation in Zvachim, where he says that the person is standing in the Darom and then leans over and does the Shechita in the Tzafon. There you would have at least the Shechita in the hand of the Shochet in the Tzafon. Over here, according to Rashi's explanation, the long knife would make it that he's completely out of the Tzafon. It's only the knife that's going into the Tzafon. The Gemara says about that, the Rabbi Achia Nafko. That we already know from the Limud of Rabbi Achia. The Tanya, Rabbi Achia Omer, Shachat Oto, Al Yerach HaMizbeach Tzafona. This is the source for north, or the necessity to do Shechita in the north. This is found by the Korban Olah. Over there it says that you have to shecht it Al Yerach HaMizbeach Tzafona. Mata Maloma. The fish in Matsinu b'mekabel, she'omeid b'tzafon, u'mekabel b'tzafon. Because by Kabbalat Adam, we find that there's a necessity not only to do the Kabbalat Adam in the north, but the person doing the Kabbalat, the mekabel, must also be in the north. Be'mamad b'daron, mekibel b'tzafon pasul. He stood in the south and did the Kabbalat Adam in the north, it would be problematic. Yochol abzekein. You would have thought maybe Shechita has the same din. Tamalomar oto. So that comes from the oto that's found by the Olah. B'shchat oto, al yerach mizbeach tzafona. Oto b'tzafon, v'lo ha-shochet tzavich liot omeid b'tzafon. The animal, the object of the Shechita has to be in the north, but the person performing the Shechita does not need to be in the north. Now, even though this is written by an Olah, and we're looking for a source for a Chatat, nevertheless, we know that the Chatat is derived from the Olah. We saw before all the psukim that we brought, that in the place that you do the Shechita Olah, that's where you do the Shechita Chatat. Whatever is true of the Shechita Olah is going to be true of the Shechita Chatat. So if by the Olah you only require that the animal be in the Tzafon and not the Shochet, then it's obviously going to be true by the Chatat as well, because it is learnt from the Olah. So once Rabbi Achia already told us that from the Pasuk by Olah, we don't need an Oto by Seir Nasi to teach us that. Ela Oto B'Tzafon, Ve'en Ben Of B'Tzafon. Comes to teach you that only animals need Shechita in the north. Ofot, birds, do not need Shechita b'tzafon. Salkadat ko amino leite b'kal v'chomer mi benzon. We would have thought that it's a kal v'chomer from animals to birds. Uma benzon shelo kavalo koen kavalo tzafon. When it comes to Shechita, which can be done even by a zar, you don't need a kohen. Nevertheless, kavalo tzafon, you have to do it in the north. Benof, shikavalo kohen, the shechita, or really malika of the oath, must be done by the kohen. Enu din shenikvalo tzafon, certainly it must be done, or should be done, in the north. Mala benzon, shikain kavalo kli. Wait a minute, that's not a great kavachomer, because there are chumrot by behema as well. And the chumra by behema is that you require a kli, a machelet, a knife, in order to do this shechita. And therefore, you can't make a kavachomer or have a havamina that just because the animal shechted in the north, so too a bird would be in the north, and therefore you need something to exclude it. You have no reason to include it at this point. There's nothing in the Torah that says the oaf has to be done in the north, and there's nothing that would say to include it from a behema. It's not a kal v'chomer, because the behema also has chumrot. The fact that it requires a knife is a chumra, and so you can't learn from behema to oaf, and therefore I don't have a havamina that oaf should be in the north. If I don't have a havamina, it should be in the north. What do I need a miut to tell me that only behema in the north and not a bird in the north? Ella oto b'tzafon, vein pesach b'tzafon. Rather, we learn from this that oto goes in the north But the Pesach doesn't need to be in the north. Pesach, meet the Rebbe Eliezer ben Yaakov nafka. The fact that you don't need north for Pesach is already known from Eliezer ben Yaakov, the Tanya. Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, yochol yeheya Pesach to unsafon. You would think that the Pesach, which is kodshim kalim, which generally don't need safon, you would think anyways needs safon. Vidinu, and it's a kavachomer. Uma ulash, lo kavala zman v'shchitata, kavala safon. And Ola, which can be brought at any time, there's a necessity for tzafon. Pesach shekabalo zman, Pesach which has a particular time in which it needs to be brought, the shchitato, shekabalo zman the shchitato, it has a particular time in which its shchita needs to be done, ben arabayim on the 14th, enu din shekabalo tzafon, certainly it should require a tzafon. Where it says, how can you compare that? Malo Ola, shekain kalil. You can't learn from an Ola, Ola goes completely on the mizbech, as opposed to Pesach, where they have the Shfichat Adam, that one Matan Dam that's going on the Mizbeach. Otherwise, the Mizbeach doesn't get very much from the Pesach versus an Olah, where it gets everything. So Mechatat, you can learn it out of Kavachomer for Chatat. Malachatat, Shekein Mechaperet. So now you try to have a Kavachomer from Chatat, a Chatat which comes at any time, at least when you need Kapara, it still requires Tzafon. Certainly the Pesach should require Tzafon. Where it says, chatat is not a good paradigm or precedent because, kei mechaperet al chavei kretot. It is mechaper on serious violations. So it has a chumrah associated with it, which is it provides kapara for chayavei kretot. So me'asham, we'll learn out of me'asham, which provides kapara, but not necessarily for chayavei kretot. Mala asham, shekein kodshei kodoshim. Asham also is kodshei kodoshim, so you can't learn from it. So where it says, mikulu nami, shekein kodshei kodoshim. Once you get there, then all of them are problematic. Ola, Chatat, and Hashem are in different category than Pesach, and you can't learn from them. It also blocks what we would call a Tzedah Shaveh. You could have taken all three of them, which is taken in Hashem, a Chatat, and an Ola, and said between the three of them, you see that even though they're not Kavu Alehem Zman, they're still done in the Tzafon, Pesach that's Kavu Alehem Zman certainly should be done in the Tzafon. But because they have a common denominator between them, which is that they are all Kodshei Kodoshim, that makes it that we can't learn from them to Pesach, which is Kodshim Kalim. So you have no Kal Vachomer over here. If you have no Kal Vachomer, then you don't need Oto to exclude a Pesach, because you wouldn't have any Havamina, you know, that Pesach should be Bitzafon. So the Gemara says two options now about Oto, and what it seems to be is that Rabbi Achia, who uses Sokhat Oto Yerch Mizbeach Tzafona, he uses the Oto over there to teach you that the Korban must be in the Tzafon. The person shechting does not have to be in the tzafon. There are alternate limudim as to what to do with that oto. And what the Gemara says is, let's use those alternatives for this oto of Seir Nasi. The people that argue on Rabbi Achia's position there think that either oto was coming to exclude a Pesach, or think that oto is coming to exclude an oath. So now that Rabbi Achia used the oto by the case of Olah to teach you that the Korban is in the north, but not the Shochet, then let's go to Seir Nasi, we have Oto there, and use the Oto there to exclude the other options that were alternatives for the word Oto by Ola. And both times the Gemara rejects it because those other Limudim have Havaminas that are not so strong. And therefore it's not necessary to have the Oto or to have the exclusion. So the Gemara is now in a bind as to what to do with the Oto that we find by Seir Nasi. And therefore it says, Elo lo'olam ki damrinan mi'ikara. We're going back to the original assumption, which is Oto bitzafon, reina shochet bitzafon. The animal is in the north, but not the shochet in the north. The kakash lechami Rabbi Achia nafka that we already learned that from the shachat oto ayerch mizbech tzafona by the Ola. The Rabbi Achia lav de meute shochet b'tzafon hu da'ata. He's not coming to tell you that the shochet doesn't need to be in the tzafon. He's going to teach you the diuk the other way. Ein a shochet b'tzafon, avala mikabel b'tzafon. He's going to teach you the diok out of that, not the actual din. That din, that the shochet doesn't need to be in the tzafon, is learned from Seir Nasi. That's the shachat oto. Oto, the animal must be in the tzafon. The shochet does not need to be in the tzafon. Now we also have a shachat oto that's found by Olav. Shachat oto from his back tzafona. What does that oto teach me? Teach me the exact same information. The animal in the tzafon, not the shochet in the tzafon. So why do I need a duplication of that information? I don't. But the duplication of the information also gives me an inference, which is that the first time you told me, if the shechet in the north, but the shochet doesn't need to be in the north, That's the coming to tell me the core information, that the Shochet doesn't need to be in the north. When you tell me the second time, it's coming to tell me the inference, that only in the case of the Shochet does he not need to be in the north. But the Mikabel does need to be in the north. Someone who's doing the Kabbalat Adam is required to be in the same location as where the Kabbalat Adam is being done. And as the Shita Mikubetza points out in Ot Yudzayin, Toritz, Mistavra de Miuta Avishachat, the Samech Leikoi, Yokte Avishachat Oto, Midolo Mimaitin and Elo Oto, Michlaud de Mikabel Bitsafon. The fact that the Oto is a Miut and is adjacent to the word Vishachat implies that that's only true by Vishachat and not true by Mikabel. And that's what creates this inference. From the fact that the Shochet doesn't need to be in the Tzafon, that implies that the Mikabel does need to be in the Tzafon. So the Gemara says, Mikabel that has to be in the north, Mi Lakach Vilakach Nafka. That we already know from the limit of the extra Vav that is found by Vilakach, which teaches us that not only does the Kabbalat Adam have to be done in the north, but rather but also the Mikabel, the one who's doing the Kabbalat Adam, has to be in the north. And that's because the pasuk that's brought by the Chatat HaYachid, after he does the Shachat Ota L'Chatat Bimkom HaShe Yishchat Et HaOla, then it says, V'lakach HaKohen Midam HaChatat Be'etzba'o V'natan Al Kornot Mizbach HaOla V'et Kol Dama Yishpoch Yisod HaMizbeach. So the lakach over there is the Kabbalat Adam. He's taking the dam to place it on the Mizbeach. But it doesn't just say lakach, it says V'lakach. And the Gemara learns from Lakach is lo ikach. That not only is it that the dam has to be taken, the Kabbalah has to be done, lo ikach. He has to take himself also into the north. The truth is that the Gemara continues on over there and learns it from Vilakach, just above itself. But nevertheless, the limud that we have is from Lakach, Vilakach. If that's the case, I don't need an inference to teach me that the Mikabel is in the north. I have an limud from the Psukim explicitly that lo ikach has to take himself into the north. So the Gemara answers, lakach vilakach, lo mashmalei. He doesn't think that the vav is enough for a limud over here. And so therefore he learns it out of the inference from saying v'shachat oto twice. One time to tell you that the shochet doesn't need to be in the north. The second time to tell you that the mikabel does need to be in the north. Because he doesn't agree or doesn't believe that vilakach is a sufficient limud to teach you that the individual or the Mikabel Dam must be in the north. So that's the answer to what we do with Vishachat Oto, is that we use it to teach us about Shchita Bitzafon and not Shochet Bitzafon. And the duplication comes to give us the inference that the Mikabel does need to be in the Tzafon. And that's all assuming that you don't subscribe to the other limud that the Mikabel has to be in the Tzafon from Lakach Vilakach. And now, the Mishnah ended with V'chayav Alishata, V'alarichata, V'alafiyata. That the individual is chayav not only on the baking of the mincha as chametz, but even on the kneading of it, the shaping of it, and the baking of it. Each one of those avodot result in the individual being chayav malkot for violation of chimutz with regards to these activities. So Amar Rav Papa, Afa loke shtaim. If you baked it, then you are chayav two sets of malkot. Achat al arichata, v'achat al afiyata. One for shaping it, and one for baking it. V'ha amart, ma'afiyah miyuchedet, shi ma'aseh yechidi, v'chayim na'aleh b'fnei atzma. Didn't you have in the Mishnah, or the way the limud works, for the davar shiyatza min haklal, lo lamed atzmo yatza, el lamed haklal kulo yatza. And then we say, what was the unique aspect of Afiyah? Was that Afiyah miyuchedet shimaseh yechidi. That is an individual, an independent action. V'chayvin alayah b'fnei atzma. And you're chayav for it alone. Over here you're telling me if you do Afiyah, you're chayav for Afiyah and Aricha. Doesn't sound like you're chayav for it alone. Lokasho, had arichu v'afahu, had arichavrei v'yayv lei v'afah. Depends on how it was done. If he does both the Aricha and the Afiyah, versus if someone else does the Aricha and he does the Afiyah. So now there are two ways to look at this. Rashi believes that integral or inherent in Afiyah is Aricha. That means that anytime you do Afiyah, you also automatically are doing Aricha. So if a person, for instance, does Afiyah without doing any of the other avodot, he's going to be chayav shtayim, because by definition he did aricha and he did afiyah. Does afiyah create a chiyuv that includes both aricha and afiyah? So therefore, in a situation or a scenario where another individual does the aricha and the latter party does just the afiyah, the latter party is going to be chayav twice. He's going to be chayav once for aricha and once for afiyah. So that's the case that Rav Popo was speaking about, which is a case where you only did the afiyah, and the chiddush is that even though you only did the afiyah, you're also going to be chayav for aricha. Not much of a chiddush, because Rashi says by definition you're doing aricha when you do the afiyah. On the other hand, in a situation where the one individual did both the aricha and the afiyah, then you're going to be chayav one for the aricha and one for the afiyah. Because the afiyah that has aricha included in it, you already were chayav. You already did aricha beforehand. And so you chayav each one individually. So what Rashi suggests is that the case where we say it's independent is where you did both avodot. Over there you have aricha that you're chayav for, and you have afiyah that you're chayav for, each one independently. On the other hand, if someone else did the aricha and you do the afiyah, over there the person who does the afiyah is also going to be chayav for aricha. And that's the case of Rav Popo, where you're going to be chayav twice, even though you're just doing the one action of afiyah, because afiyah subsumes within it aricha. That's the view of Rashi. The Baalei Tosafot are bothered by exactly what you're noting over here, which is that it's very hard still to understand where you have afiyah that is miyukhedet. Because according to Rashi, by definition, afiyah includes aricha in it. So you're going to tell me in a case where one individual did both the afiyah and the aricha, in that case the afiyah is independent. It's only really independent because you're chayav for aricha beforehand and you're not going to be chayav for aricha twice. But it doesn't really make afiyah independent. And therefore, the Baalei Tosafot disagree and say that afiyah and aricha are completely independent. That they are not necessarily integrally connected or inherently connected. And you can have aricha that's separate from afiyah. But most times when you do afiyah, the person who's doing the afiyah also does what's called gemar aricha. They finish up the aricha. So in situations where the individual is finishing up the aricha and doing afiyah, in that situation they're going to be chayav twice or two times, one for aricha, one for afiyah. The chiddush there is that even though the other individual did all the aricha and the main work of the shaping, nevertheless, if you do the finishing touches, or when you do the afiyah, you do the gemar aricha, in that case you're going to be chayav for aricha, even though you didn't do the main work or the main craftsmanship of aricha, you're still going to be chayav. As opposed to Rashi, who says that by definition, afiyah is the gemar aricha. It's subsumed in afiyah that you're doing the gemar aricha. Tosafot says, there is gemar aricha, and there is aricha. But that doesn't mean that they're integrally connected to afiyah. Just means that two people can be chayav aricha, even though they're still independent of afiyah. And that's what Tosafot says then. The case here is a case where if the individual did aricha and then did afiyah, he's going to be chayav aricha. It's going to be chayav afiyah. So therefore, according to the Baalei Tosafot, the question is, who did the gemar aricha? And you can see that in the Rabbeinu Gershom, which he seems to have the view of the Baalei Tosafot. V'had kamar ma'afiyah miuchedet kagon darach chavrei v'yayiv lei v'afa. So when is afiyah independent? When the friend did the aricha and he did the afiyah. In that case, the afiyah can be totally separate from the aricha, because, again, it has to do with whether you did the gemar aricha together with the afiyah or didn't do it together with the afiyah. If the other individual did all the aricha, including the gemar aricha, and then you just did the afiyah, that's a scenario where it's going to be independent. But in a case, the ha'arachu, bafahu, lokeshtayim. In that case, you're going to get two sets of malkot, one for the aricha, one for the afiyah. So the Ganiv Gershom seems to be taking the view of the Baalei Tosafot, and the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom formulates it is even in a stronger way than the Baalei Tosafot, which is kasavar de'afiyah kagamra kula milta de lechem, that there's a completion of the whole lechem with the afiyah itself, and that's what brings the dual set of malkot. Now, Rav Papa's statement is made when you do both the aricha and the afiyah. The aricha that we're speaking about here is not necessarily the full-fledged aricha, it's the gemar aricha. In the case where you did the gemar aricha and the afiyah, you're going to be chayav shtayim. In a case someone else did the gemar aricha and you did the afiyah, you're only going to be chayav one. And that's the distinction that Baalei Tosafot are making. But that still means that afiyah is independent. You could have a case where the individual will do afiyah, and that's all he'll be chayav for is afiyah. without Gemara Aricha. Tosafot himself criticizes his own Shita because he basically says the difference between the two cases is whether you did Gemara Aricha or you didn't do Gemara Aricha. That's really the question at hand, and that's what the distinction should have been made by the Gemara. Does he do Gemara Aricha with the Afiyah, or does he not do Gemara Aricha with the Afiyah? That should have been the distinction, which seems Iker Chaser Min HaSefer. It shouldn't have spoken about Aricha, it should have spoken about Gemara Aricha. The fact that that's missing is somewhat of a problem for his explanation. But in that way, Tosafot avoids the problem that Rashi has, which is that, according to Rashi, you never get Afiyah to be independent, as opposed to Tosafot, who says it is independent, but in most scenarios, you will have Gemara Aricha along with the Afiyah. So those are two different ways to explain this Gemara. Tanu Banan, Bechor Shachazot Dam. So a Bechor which either has a blood clot or has some congestion, quote-unquote, with its blood. And in their day, they believed that bloodletting would then relieve that problem. So Mekizim Oto Et Adam B'makom She'enu Sim Bo Mum. You're allowed to bloodlet in a location where it doesn't make a mum in the Bechor. Remember that when it comes to Kodoshim, there's a restriction against putting a mum in Kodoshim. Bechor is no different than that. Bechor is something that shouldn't end up on Mizbeach. If it gets a mum, it no longer goes on the Mizbeach, and the Kohen can eat it locally. It doesn't have to bring it up to Yerushalayim, doesn't have to redeem it. Here, you're not allowed to put a mum into the animal. So if it has a problem with its blood, and you want a bloodlet, you can do it in a manner that does not leave a permanent wound in the animal, does not put a mum in the animal. The way Rashi describes that is that you do it on its body. You cannot do a kazat adam in a location where it will leave a permanent blemish. As Rashi says that, that's if you do it in the eye, if you do it on the ear, you do it in places where it will leave a permanent scarring or mum there. Divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir believes in this situation, you have permission to do the kazat adam in a location where it does not leave a mum. In a place where it does leave a mum, you cannot do it. V'chachamim omrim, yakiz, af makom shosim bo mum. You can do the kazat adam even in a location where it leaves a blemish. V'vachlo ishkot aloto mum. The only proviso is the fact that you can't shech the bechor on that mum. Once the bechor gets a mum, you no longer have to bring it up to Yerushalayim, and the kohen can eat it locally. It can shech it and eat it as a bechor locally. So you need a mum for that to happen. But you created the mum there. The fact that you created the mum, now we're going to preclude you from using that mum as the means from which to shech the bechor. You have to get another mum before you can shech the bechor. We allow you to create the mum in order to relieve the animal. Rabbi Shimon Omer, af nishchat al oto mum. Shimon says, you not only can you put the mum there, you can even use that mum as the means by which you're now going to make it into a bechor that is no longer roi the mizbeach and the kohen can eat it. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu meit, ein mekizin lo et adam. Even if the animal dies, you have no right to put a mum in the animal. So first of all, let's deal with the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to Rabbi Meir's position. Rabbi Meir believes you can bloodlet in a location where it will not leave a permanent blemish. You cannot do it in a location where it will leave a blemish. Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to that position of Rabbi Meir. He just adds on top of that, adam bahula mamono. A person is worried about losing his money. And since he is afraid of losing the animal, if you tell him he can do it in a place where it won't leave a blemish, he'll go ahead and do it even in a place where it will leave a blemish. So Rabbi Yehuda says, hands off. Because if we permit you to do it in the manner that is permissible, you'll end up doing it in the way that's not permissible because you're just worried about losing your animal. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position. And it's built on top of Rabbi Meir's position with an additional proviso of the Chachamim that despite the fact that it's mutar to do it in a place where it doesn't leave a blemish, we're not going to let you do that because we want your hands off here because you're going to be too excited, too upset, and end up doing it in the wrong location. The Chachamim say for the exact same reason, we have to permit it. If we don't permit it, the guy's going to do it anyway. So for that reason, we have to say that he's allowed to do it because if we don't permit it, he's going to do it anyway. So we may as well give him permission to do it in a place that is permissible or in a way that is permissible and not block him totally from interacting with the animal. Now, Rabbi Shimon Shita is the most interesting over here. Rashi over here quotes, and you would have assumed this is the case, Rabbi Shimon has a Shita on the Gemara in Shabbat, but it's not only true in the Gemara in Shabbat, it's true throughout Shas, that davar she'enu mitkaven, when somebody does something unintentionally, that it is mutar, it is totally fine. That's true by Melechet Shabbat, It's also true by other issues throughout Shas. This is one of them. What Rabbi Shimon is saying is that even though you're putting a blemish in the animal by doing the bloodletting, that's not your intent. Your intent is to bloodlet the animal, to free the animal of this illness, whatever difficulty it is suffering. If that's your intent, then the fact that it gets a blemish in it is a davar she'enu mitkavein. It's an unintentional consequence of what you're doing. It's not an intentional consequence of what you're doing. And therefore, that's the reasoning behind Rabbi Shimon's position. Now, obviously, you have to say it's a case where it's not a psik reshe, where it's not a foregone outcome that if you do this bloodletting, this will be a permanent blemish. It has to be in a location where it's a safek, it's not clear. In those situations, then it won't be a psik reshe, and that's why, according to Rabbi Shimon, it'd be mutar. That's the way Rashi learns. The Bali Tosafot point out that this is a braita, a tosefta in Bechorot, which if you match it up against the Mishnah in Bechorot, has some slight nuances or differences between it, and in that way he explains the Shito differently. Over here, the Chachamim say, over here in our Breita, the Tosefta says, the Chachamim say you can even do it in a place where there's a mum. In the Mishnah in Bechorot, Chachamim say that you can do it in a location where it doesn't make a mum. So Tosefta wants to understand, what's the difference between the Chachamim's position in the Mishnah? This is the Chachamim's position over here in the Breita. In the Breita, they let you do it anywhere, even in a place where it makes a mum. In the Mishnah, they only let you do it in a location where it doesn't make a mum. So what Tosafot explains is that there's actually a difference in the scenario, and this goes to your question. In the case in the Mishnah in Bechorot, the animal is ill, but not irreparably ill, and it has the ability to do it or bloodlet it in a location where it won't cause a mum or cause a blemish. On the other hand, in our case here, the animal is deathly ill. There is no cure for this animal except to make a mum in the animal. That's the way Tosafot reads it. Rashi over here says something interesting. Later on he says, Rashi says that there's no bigger mum than the fact that the animal is going to die from whatever ailment it has right now. So it already has a mum in it because it is deathly ill. The Bali Tosafot formulated slightly different, and they say that it has a situation that the animal will die from unless you make a mum in it. So you have to make a mum to relieve the animal. If you don't make the mum, you're never going to relieve the animal of the problem. So that's the case in the Breita. And that actually gives you a different opinion in the two locations. In the case of the Mishnah, the Chachamim say you can only do the bloodletting in a location where it does not make a mum. Because over there you have ability to solve the problem without making a mum. Therefore you don't have a right to make a mum in the animal. Over here, where you have no choice, the only way to relieve the animal is to put a mum in it. Or, according to Rashi, the animal is so deathly ill that it's going to die, and that's a mum in itself. Then what you're doing is putting a mum in an animal that already has a mum in it. So that's a separate question, which we'll get to a second in the Gemara. Are you allowed to put a mum in an animal that already has an existing mum in it? Is there a restriction against putting a mum in a baal mum? That's basically the question at hand. And the Chachamim over here say, that's fine. And that's why you can do it even in a place with the Yesh Bo Mum. The Chachamim's difference or nuance in their position actually belies a different scenario or a different case. That also means that Rabbi Shimon Shita is different in the two locations. In the Mishnah in Bechorot, Rabbi Shimon's position is based on his Shita throughout Shas, which is Dover She'enu Mitkavein is Mutar. And that's why you can put it even in a location where you'll make a Mum, it's fine. Because since you could do it in either location, whether it's a place where it doesn't have a mum, in a place where it does have a mum, and you go in and just do it, and it happens to be that it caused a mum, we don't worry about it over there because it's a davar she'enu mitkavein. But that's not true here. In our case over here, the only relief that's going to be provided is a case where you do it in a place or in a location that's going to cause a mum. So then Rabbi Shimon over here, his reasoning can't be because of davar she'enu mitkavein. Rather, it has to be for some other reason. Because over here, you are intending to do it. You are intending to make a mum, because that's the only way you're going to relieve this animal. So in the Mishnah, Bechorot, it's Davar She'enu Mitkavein, and it has to be a situation where it's not a Psik Reshe. And that's Rav Shimon Lashitato, Davar She'enu Mitkavein. Over here, you can't say it's a Davar She'enu Mitkavein, because Bekavanah, that's the only way you're going to solve the problem of this animal. And so therefore, Tosafot says, Rabbi Shimon's position over here is, The Chachamim believe that we're gozer, that you can't shecht in this mum, dilma ate de rume ulo hakiz, afilo bloach zodam. Because we're afraid of people playing games and putting the mum there and saying, oh yeah, the animal had a problem and I have to put a mum there in order to relieve the animal. And then they'll use that mum then to shecht the animal. So the Chachamim are gozer that you can't use the mum that you make in order to shecht the animal. Rabbi Shimon Mekil Tvei, de lo gozer. He is not gozer over here. Shari after shkotolav al pishasam mum bimit kavein. He allows you to shecht it even though you did it intentionally. So Tosfot sees this braita as being distinct from the Mishnah in Bechorot. Therefore he says Rabbi Shimon Shita is not about davar sheino mit kavein over here, rather about the fact that he doesn't worry about people playing games or cheating with regards to making this mum in the animal. So that's how Tosfot deals with it. Rashi, you can see over here, says this is Rabbi Shimon Shindato, that it's a davar sheino mit kavein. And Rashi sees this braita as being identical to the Mishnah over there, at least with regards to the reasoning of Rabbi Shimon. But obviously you have the issues that the Balei Tosafot raise, which is that the braita, in contrast to the Mishnah, has different opinions with regards to the Chachamim. And you have to explain why they have a different opinion over here. That is precipitated by what the Gemara is about to say, which is that the situation is a situation in which the mum already exists, and now you're putting a mum into a baal mum. But by then changing that case, that also changes the shita of Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon's shita over here can be even bimit kavein. Even when you intend to do it, you still are okay, because this is the only solution to the problem that you have. Just like the Chachamim allow you to put a mum in the animal here, Rabbi Shimon does as well. And Rabbi Shimon just doesn't make a gzeira that you can't shecht on that mum. Alright, so now, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bahava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Akol Modim, everybody agrees, and it goes to your question, bimechametz, achar mechametz, shu chayav. That if you do chametz twice, that you are chayav, because the Pesukim say, lo te'aseh chametz, ve'lo te'afeh chametz. So there you see that even though there was asiyat chametz, still afterwards there's still a restriction of afiyat chametz. Now again, I pointed this out yesterday. The Gemara began, when it saw the Mishnah yesterday, as saying that the lo te'aseh chametz is about the mincha before you put the chametz on, or about the chametz itself, versus the afiyat, which was about the shirayim. From that point forward, the Gemara conflates the two and says, well, if you know Asiyah already, what do I need Afiyah for? And here again, you see the Gemara doing the same thing. If I have Asiyah and then Afiyah, it shows you that Afiyah after Asiyah is also Chayav. So despite the fact that they might be speaking about two different issues, one might be speaking about the Kometz, one might be speaking about the Shirayim, nevertheless, the Gemara over here says that the two are correlated, and therefore if Asiyat Chametz makes you Chayav, then the fact that you're also chayav afiyat chametz after the asiyat chametz shows you that there is a din or a chiyuv for mechametz achar mechametz. How exactly do you have such a scenario? So here you have amongst the achronim different suggestions. And again, those different suggestions will have implication as to what you think or how you're going to be chayav mechametz achar mechametz. It could be that the first individual only caused it to be chametz partially, and then the second individual then increased the chimutz that's associated with it, and that's what it means, mechametz achar mechametz. Some say that it was mechametz a kezayit worth of it, and then the second individual was mechametz a different kezayit worth of it. So that's how you get mechametz achar mechametz. We saw yesterday in the Balei HaTosafot, which I pointed out to you, that Tosafot thinks that's the Iker Chiddush of the fact that you're chayav for each of the individual avodot, which is that each avodah, even though it's already chametz and should have made the mincha psula, as you go on to do the next avodah, as it is chametz, you are still chayav for that mechametz, achar mechametz that you are chayav for, and that might relate to maybe either that it creates chametz nuksha, it's a lower form of chametz, and then you increase the intensity of the chametz as you go along, or it might be even according to the Balei Tosafot, if you have it full-fledged chametz, as long as you continue to do the avodot in the preparation of the mincha, that's the chiddush over here, that even though now it's already pasul from being a mincha, nevertheless, it still will make you chayav. Now, there are those who point out that that's only true with regards to the shirayim. When it comes to the chometz itself, once the chometz is chametz, it can't be put on the mizbeach. There's nothing you can do with it. So therefore, by the chometz, if it's chametz, there's no din of mechametz, achar mechametz by the chometz. By the shirayim, where the chometz already went on the mizbeach, and now you have the shirayim, and there's a restriction against chametz by the shirayim, there you can have mechametz, achar mechametz, because there's nothing that inherently makes it pasul, the shirayim. It just says you're not allowed to do this to the shirayim. Because to the komets, where not only are you not allowed to do it to the komets, but it makes it inherently pasul. You can't put it on the mizbeach. If it's put on the mizbeach, it comes off the mizbeach. Once you make it pasul, it's no longer a komets. There's nothing to speak about in terms of mechametz, achar mechametz. But by the shirayim, where the only restriction is lo te'afeh chametz, there the restriction is against making it chametz, but there's nothing inherently that's pasul, quote-unquote, with the shirayim. Once it is chametz, of course you can't eat it once it's chametz because you're not allowed to make it into chametz. But that means that you have the capacity to make it chametz over and over again, and that's why there's mechametz chametz with regards to the shirayim. B'misareis, achar misareis, shuchayav. That if you do castration after castration, you're also chayav. Now this should give indication of the fact that when we say castration after castration, which is impossible, if the animal's already castrated, you can't castrate it again. So that clearly means that you've increased the intensity or the damage that is done over here, as we'll see as the examples that are brought in the Gemara. So too, you must have to say the same thing by the mechametz, achar mechametz. Even though it's already chametz, either you're increasing the intensity of the chametz, you're making more of it chametz, or according to the Baal HaTosafot, you're just simply moving it along in the process, and it's more chametz just because of the fact that you're continuing the process with chametz. So dichtiv, the pasuk says umauch v'katut v'natuk v'karut imala koreit uchayav. If you're chayav already for krita, ala notek lo kochakein, then certainly you should be chayav on notek. Elalavi, to tell you that notek achar koreit shu chayav. That when you do netika after krita, that you are chayav. Let's just go through each of these items. Ma'uch means to crush. Katut means to pulverize. So the ma'uch is either a reference to the member or the testicles being crushed. Katut means that they are pulverized. Vinatuk vikarut is a machloket Rashi and Tosafot over here as to what that means. Rashi over here says that the karut is that you sever the testicles completely, but they're still within the sac. Natuk is that you remove them completely. And so what Rashi says is, im ba'achad mekarata beitzim, he cut the testicles, ve'nichim tloyim bekis, he leaves them still in the sac. Ba'achem inatkan gamre, that he took them off completely, means that he took them out of the sac. Then, chayav gamhu, the second guy is also chayav. So it's clear that the first guy castrated the animal, it's only that the next guy is just making it even more permanent, quote unquote, but the first guy did something irreversible. It's just another action that furthers or goes further in its castrating of the animal. The animal's already castrated. You're just furthering along this process of castration. And again, even though the castration or the sirus is already done, the Torah is telling you that if you do sirus, achar sirus, you're going to be chayav. That's Rashi's view over here. The Baal HaTosafot disagree and say that V'yafshar l'markein. He says it's impossible to say that because nituk and krut lo avimumim. In the Mishnah in Bechorot, the Gemara says in Bechorot that karut and nituk are not mumim upon which you can sheft a bechor. If Rashi's right about nituk means the severing of the sac, taking the testicles out, that's already a visible mum that should allow you then to sheft the bechor. And therefore, he says, nira. The koreit, hainu shekartu mimakom chiburo, velo shenichritu de gamre. That the karut is a case where you sever the testicles, but they're still hanging on. They're still attached, even though they've been severed. And then natuk is a complete severing of the testicles, but in both cases they remain within the sac. That's the way Baal HaTosafot explain it. But what the Gemara says is, we know, or we take for granted, that mechametz achar mechametz is chayav. That we already established was the fact that you're chayav for all the avodot, including lisha, aricha, and afia, that shows you that you're chayav for mechametz achar mechametz. Mechametz achar mechatzareis comes from the fact that the posu has to tell you that you're chayav for nituk, even though you're already chayav for karut. If you were chayav for karut, certainly you're chayav for nituk, so why write both of them to tell you that if you do nituk after karut, then you are chayav also. That teaches you that there is mechametz achar mechatzareis. The reason we're bringing this up is because of the case of the Bechor, which is here, you're putting a mum in an existing Baal Mum. Is that allowed or is that problematic? Rabbi Meir Savar Kol Mum Lo Yebo, the Pasuk says you may not put any mum into the animal, and that's still the case. Even after the animal is a Baal Mum, there's still a restriction against putting more mum in. Kol Mum Lo Yebo. Rabbanan Savre, Rabbanan say, Tamim, yeah, the only time there's a restriction against putting a mum in it is when it's taimim. When it is yule ratzon, you could put it on the mizbeach. When it's ro'oi le mizbeach, then there's a restriction against putting a mum in it. If it's not ro'oi le mizbeach, then there's no restriction against putting a mum in it. Rabbi Meir nami aktiv tamimi yele ratzon. What does Rabbi Meir do with the pasuk of tamimi yele ratzon? How the mutei bal mum meikara. That's come to exclude a congenital bal mum. Because a congenital bal mum, it's telling you that there's no restriction against putting a mum in it, because there was never tamimi yele ratzon. It was never ra'oi le mizbeach, and therefore there's no restriction against putting a mum in it. Where it says, bal mum meikara, dikla ba'almaho. Expression of the Gemara says that an animal with a congenital mum is a palm tree. It's not anything that is usable or ra'oi le mizbeach, and that means it's not even considered within the world of Kodoshim. And that's why if you're mekadesh an animal and then it gets a mum in it, you redeem the animal, because the Kodesh was chal, and the mum makes it that it's psul gufo, but you still have damim in there and you redeem it. On the other hand, if you try to be mekadesh an animal that has a pre-existing mum, or especially a congenital mum, it has no effect. You can't be mekadesh such an animal. Again, you can't mekadesh it for damim, but if you try kedushat gufo, it doesn't work. So over here, where it has a congenital mum, it was never ro'oi. Ela le'me'utei psulei ha'mukdashim nachar pidyonam. I'm going to tell you that after you redeem an animal that has a mum in it, there's no longer a restriction against putting a mum in it. Because I mean, I would have thought, oh, asirei b'giza v'avoda. So because psulei ha'mukdashim, after they are redeemed, which means you have an animal that was kodesh l'mizbeach, got a mum in it, you're allowed to redeem it now. After you've redeemed it, you're allowed to eat the animal. It becomes chulin. But there are residual restrictions associated with it. One is that you can't do work with it. You can't milk it. You can't shear it. You can't do work with it. Those restrictions belie that there's some kedusha left in the animal. You would have thought there's also kedusha left to the point where you can't put in a mum. That only when it is ro'oi the mizbeach, after it's psulei mekdashim, and after it's already redeemed, then you can't put a mum in it. For Rabbi Meir, before it's redeemed, you still have a restriction against putting a mum in it. Rabbana namiktiv kol mum lo yebo. What did the Chachamim do with the pasuk? Says you can't put any mum in it. Sounds like irrespective. You can't put a mum in kodashim. How mi ba'ile le gedanya? They need it for this brayta. Kol mum lo yebo. Says that you can't put any mum blemish in it. Any Allah shalo yitain bo mum. It only sounds like you can't put a mum in it. How do I know that you can also not be the cause, indirect or passively the cause of a mum in it? Shalo yaniach batzik od vela al gabi al ozen, that you don't put some dough on the ear of the animal or a bunch of pressed figs on the ear of the animal, so that kadesh yavo kelev yitlenu, a dog will come and bite it off, and in that process will bite the ear and cause a blemish in the ear. How do I know that you can't do that? Tamalomar kol mum. Amar mum, v'amar kol mum. Meaning that there's two dinim here. There's mum, and then there's kol mum. So had I just had the pasuk mum lo yeh bo, I would have assumed that lo yeh means do not create, and the way that you can see here on the Masorah, the Shasi brings, lo yechayeh, do not create, do not make a mum in the animal. That's how I would have read the pasuk of kol mum lo yeh. Lo yeh bo means lo yechayeh bo. Don't create or actively create a mum in it. Once I have the word kol, that's a reboot to tell you not only when you actively make a mum, even if you passively create the mum, you're the facilitator of the mum, that's also restricted. And that's what they need the pasuk of kol mum, lo yeh bo. So they don't have that available to tell you that any mum is problematic. The mayor says, no, kol mum. Anytime you make a mum, even if there's already a mum, kol mum is problematic. The rabbanan use it for this braita. Amar Rabbi Ami, he niach se'or agabe isa. You put a sourdough, a rising agent, and just put it on top of a dough. Now the dough we're assuming here is a mincha, and you're placing this on top of the mincha. Falach v'yashavlo. And then he goes and sits back in his armchair and waits to see what's going to happen. V'nitchamtza me'aleha. Sure enough, it rises on its own. He doesn't have to do anything. It happens by itself. Chayav aleha k'maseh Shabbat. You are responsible for that, similar to the case by Shabbat. As Tosfot points out, the havamin over here is the fact that even though the pasuk says lo taseh v'lo ta'afeh, as Tosfot says, that means mashma midei da'asiya, requires an activity, an action, lisha, arikha, fiyah, v'kituf, The chiddush here is hachanami lo te'aseh karinen bay. This is subsumed under that definition of lo te'aseh, similar to the case by Shabbat, that if you facilitate or start a process, that's enough to be considered an asiyah by melacha of Shabbat, and also over here an asiyah with regards to the restriction against making a mincha into chametz, despite the fact that it's not active like the other types of examples we had, which were lishach, afiyah, v'kituf. Nevertheless, the fact that you placed it down is considered to be enough of an asiyah that we're going to hold you accountable for that, because we have a prior dime for that, and that is Shabbat. A similar scenario by Shabbat. Are you really chayav for that? If you put meat down on coals, if you flip it, you're going to be chayav. If you don't flip it, you're going to be patur. So what does it mean that you're a chayav? Kimasitzli shel Shabbat. That is like the masitzli of Shabbat. So now, the way Rashi learns this is that the case here is not dissimilar to that on Shabbat. Shabbat, you put down meat on the coals. You're going to be chayav for putting the meat on the coals and for it cooking on the coals. So to over here, you put the store down on the isah. You're going to be chayav for the results of that action. That's the way Rashi learns. And as Rashi points out, that even though over there they say that you have to flip in order to be chayav, as Rashi says over there, it makes sense, or there is a reason to distinguish. There's no issue whether you do or don't flip it. The chimutz is going to take place either way. So Rashi says it's equivalent to the case of putting it on the coals. It doesn't have the qualifications of that case, because over there the qualifications are uniquely associated with meat. But had it been that you didn't need to flip it and just put the meat on, you would have been chayav. And similarly, in the case of chametz, where flipping is not relevant, over there you're going to be chayav just for the placement itself. Tosafot has a slightly more complex formulation of that, and that's because of what's going to happen in the upcoming Gemara. Gufa. Let's try to understand this. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan, niach basar gabel chem, efach bo chayav, lo efach bo patur. Hey, chidami. What exactly is the scenario here? Ilei madhi lo efach bay lo bashil. Had you not flipped it, it wouldn't have cooked. It wouldn't have roasted on the coals. Pshita. That's clear that when you flip it, you're going to be chayav. You don't flip it, you're going to be patur, because otherwise it wouldn't have cooked. Ela di lo mepech le nami abi bashil. So if you say now the scenario is a case where, had he not flipped it, would have cooked or roasted anyway. Amai lo mechayiv. Then why aren't you chayav? Elim kein, you flip it. I mean that you're caught in a bind here. If flipping it is what makes you chayav, then it's obvious that you're chayav when you flip it, because it wouldn't have cooked without you flipping it. If the flipping isn't necessary, then why aren't you chayav without the flipping? Lo, tzricha. The lo hefach bay have a bushel mitzad achad kemachal ben drusai. Had you not flipped it, on one side, it would have cooked sufficiently to make you chayav on Shabbat. The threshold for being chayav on Shabbat for cooking is kemachal ben drusai. Ben drusai was a famous robber. He used to work all night and he used to want to eat quickly. And therefore, he didn't wait for his meat to cook because the authorities were always chasing him down. And therefore, he ate his meat somewhat raw. Whether that's because of, again, the way that he was in a rush all the time, or that's the nature of this person, that this was a guy who liked his meat really raw, rare meat, because he liked to finish off people too. This guy was a bloodthirsty guy, and so his meat he liked that way as well. Rashi over here says, Kamachal Dushai, Shlish Humibushal. It's one-third cooked. The Rambam, on the other hand, says that Machum Dusai is half-cooked. We have different opinions as to how far Machum Dusai is. But here, in a case, had he just left it on the coals, one side of it would have reached Kemachal Ben Dusai. When you flip it over, it cooks the other side, Kemachal Ben Dusai. Because Mash Malan, that teaches us, the Chol Mitzad Echad, Machal Ben Dusai, Lo Klum Ho. That if you only cooked it on one side, Kemachal Ben Dusai, that's not Kudel cooking. If you have half the meat that's raw, the other half the meat is cooked, Kemachal Ben Dusai, you don't have cooked meat. You need to cook it on both sides, Kemachal Ben Dusai, to be Chayav. The question is, how does this relate to our case here by the Su'or and the Isa? Rashi just said, okay, the Su'or, you put it on the Isa, just like when you put meat on the coals, you're Chayav. We just said, wait a minute, you're not so chayav when you put the meat on the coals. Now the truth is, if the coals were hot enough, and it would have cooked through, and you put the meat on the coals, you're going to be chayav putting the meat on the coals. And that's what Rashi says. You put the seor on the isah, you're also chayav. There's certain melachot where you just have to be the facilitator, or you need to start the melacha. The process will continue. It's a process that will continue, but as long as you put it into action, that's enough. So by Shabbat, when you start cooking or you bake, as long as you put it into action, even though the process takes time, you're going to be chayav for it. We discussed this in the Gemara and Shabbat with regards to planting. Planting takes 3 days to take hold. You plant on Shabbat, it's not going to root till 3 days later. That's a process. So even though the process takes time to happen, you're chayav when you're zoreya on Shabbat, even though it will not be completed for a period of time. The question always is, what happens if it's interrupted? What happens if someone pulls the seed out before it roots? What happens if someone takes the bread out of the oven before it bakes? That's the discussion in the Gemara in the beginning of Shabbat. We discussed over there the different opinions with regards to this, including the late Tal and the different opinions that you have there in the Gemara in Shabbat. There, we see that an action that facilitates a process, you're chayav for it. And that's what the Gemara is saying here as well. The fact that you put the sower down on the Isa is facilitating a process that will take place. And that's enough of a maisa to make you chayav. Just like it's enough of a maisa in Shabbat, it's enough over here. Tosafot formulates it slightly differently, and he says, how come when you put something in the oven on Shabbat and you bake it, you're going to be chayav? Why don't we have the same thing like we have here? They have to flip it, you have to bake the other side. So Tosafot says, baking is different than roasting. I've got the big papa tanor mit chayev, even if you don't flip it or don't do anything to it. That's because when you bake something in an oven, the natural way is to bake the entirety of the bread. If you do nothing, it will bake the entirety of the bread. When he puts a full sourdough on top of an isa, it's not the normal way for it to make the whole thing into chametz. Only the part that is in contact with the sourdough will tend to rise. And even that side will not become full-fledged chametz, it'll only become chametz nuksha. Didami l'machal ben dusai. And this is what Tosfot says. That's why the Gemara brought the example of roasting meat on the coals. Because it has all the features of what we're speaking about here. When you put it on the coals, it only cooks one side. And that side only cooks k'machal ben dusai. So it's exactly similar to our case. When you put the sour on top, it will only be mechametz that side. And it will only be mechametz if chametz nuksha, not full-fledged chametz. So that's like a case where you put it on the meat on the coals, it cooks one side, only k'machal ben dusai. But he says, that is uniquely associated with Shabbat. By Shabbat, that's not enough to make you chayav until you cook it on both sides. In the case of the mincha, making one side of it chametz, and even chametz nuksha is enough to make you chayav. So despite the fact that the din is different here, nevertheless, the cases are similar. So the case by Shabbat, where you only chayav, because by Shabbat you need to fully cook it, so therefore you need to flip it. But here by the chametz, since even a kezayit's worth of being mechametz, it makes you chayav, then even when you put it on one side, and even when it just becomes chametz nuksha, you're going to be chayav, similar to that which would have been the case by Shabbat, if there's not a requirement by Shabbat, that you have to cook it on both sides. And that's why the Gemara brought this particular case, and not just any generic case of baking, cooking on Shabbat. And that's how he's different from Rashi, right? He says the case is much more nuanced and reflecting the nuance of the situation of the sour and the isa. Rashi just says maise and process. So you have by Shabbat, maise, process, your chayav. So dorir, maise, process, your chayav. Tosfos says, no, this is a unique circumstance where there's a special situation where you're only doing one side. It's only partially being chametz. It's chametz nuksha, not full-fledged chametz. Therefore, we look for this particular example in Shabbat, not any case where you have a maisa and a process. Okay, we're going to stop over here, 13 lines down on the top of Nenzayin Amud Aleph.